Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, our International Women's Day special, and we'll be talking all about the International Women's Strike. Today is also the day without a woman called by the Women's March in Washington. Women in over 50 countries will take time off from wage and unwage work for the whole day or for several hours or even for a few minutes. The International Women's Strike was coordinated by women in Poland following their one-day strike on October the 3rd, 2016, which defeated government attempts to criminalize abortion. Similar mobilizations happened in Korea. Mass protests against men's violence in Argentina brought out hundreds of thousands of people protesting femicide. Also, violence against women in Italy. Joint actions in several countries on the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women also brought out women in the thousands. The strike in Poland followed the example of women in Iceland, who took a day off in 1975 and brought the country to a halt. They repeated that feat in a strike, a day off, they called it, in 1985. And the women's marches against Trump mobilized millions across the United States as well as in other countries. So under the banner of solidarity is our weapon, women today are taking action. Our guests include Barbara Smith, Annie Chambers, and others. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Stay with us. We're going to go to our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle in for Eileen Alfandary with these news headlines. A potentially lengthy U.S. legislative fight over replacement of the Obamacare health law gets underway today as two House of Representatives committees begin negotiating over changes to a Republican plan backed by President Donald Trump. Both Democrats and Republicans are expected to try to reshape legislation that dismantles key provisions of the 2010 Affordable Care Act, Democratic former President Barack Obama's signature domestic policy achievement. The Republican plan, unveiled on Tuesday, would scrap Obamacare's requirement that most Americans obtain medical insurance and replace its income-based subsidies with a system of fixed tax credits of $2,000 to $4,000 to coax people to purchase private insurance on the open market. The plan faces significant hurdles in Congress. Conservative Republican lawmakers and lobbying groups slammed it for looking too much like the Obamacare program that it has been trying to kill for years. Democrats criticized it as rolling back health insurance coverage gains for millions of Americans while benefiting the rich by repealing health-related taxes. The House Ways and Means Committee, with jurisdiction over taxes, and the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees health issues, will each pursue separate markup sessions to consider amendments to the plan. Healthcare advocates are blasting the Republican plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. They say the Republican plan would cost more than Obamacare, provide less coverage, and decimate public health and prevention programs, all while offering $1 trillion in tax cuts for wealthy Americans and health industry executives over the next decade. Christopher Martinez reports.
The Republican Obamacare repeal measures are called the American Healthcare Act. And though details of the new plan are still being reviewed, health activists in California are blasting the measure. Beth Capel is a policy advocate for the group Health Access California.
Every bit of this proposal is designed to make it harder for people to get coverage, and it will mean that people will pay more to get less. So it's bad.
Anthony Wright is director of Health Access. He says the Republican plan would slash Medicaid and blow a hole in the state budget that relies on federal health care funding.
This isn't repeal and replace. This is repeal and destroy. the coverage for millions of Californians who buy coverage as individuals or who depend on the Medi-Cal program.
The first votes on the Republican repeal bill will come before the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has a chance to come out with its own estimates on how much the measures would cost and how they would affect coverage for millions of Americans. That troubles Wright.
What is shocking is that the congressional leadership is seeking to have votes on these proposals starting tomorrow in committee without that CBO score. That is highly unusual.
The Republican repeal measures would drastically change the Medicaid program for poor people, known as Medi-Cal in California. It would change Medicaid from an entitlement program to a block grant, raising the specter of likely future cuts to the program as it fails to keep up with inflation, or when people are thrown into poverty because of a recession. The House and Senate are expected to vote on the Republican plan in the coming days, but the outcome remains uncertain given Democratic opposition and Republican disputes over the details. On the State Capitol beat, I'm Christopher Martinez.
WikiLeaks released yesterday what the whistleblower group claimed were thousands of secret CIA files showing how U.S. spies hack smartphones, as well as exposing a major secret listening post in Germany. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence declined to comment on the program dubbed Weeping Angel, and the CIA in a statement would not say whether the files are real. Former CIA Director Michael Hayden told CBS's Late Show with Stephen Colbert that the program helps security efforts.
There are people out there that you want us to spy on. You want us to have the ability to actually turn on that listening device inside the TV to learn that person's intentions.
Several current and former intelligence officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, said the documents appear to be authentic and, in fact, likely have origins at the National Security Agency, where most national security hacking of overseas targets occurs. The leaked files show a large effort undertaken by CIA's Center for Cyber Intelligence to find ways to turn consumer electronics devices from smart TVs to smartphones and tablets into remotely activated spy devices. Hawaii is planning a challenge to President Donald Trump's revised travel ban. A motion filed in federal court on Tuesday in Honolulu says the state wants to amend its existing lawsuit challenging Trump's previous order. The new order bars new visas for people from six Muslim-majority countries and temporarily shuts down America's refugee program, affecting would-be visitors and immigrants from Iran, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, and Libya. Hawaii's lawsuit had been on hold while a nationwide injunction on the initial ban remained in place. I'm Max Pringle. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
That was our news headlines. And we are going to start out our International Women's Day special on the International Women's Strike happening right now in over 50 countries across the world and more than 50 cities across the United States. But I'd like to go now to a clip of a black woman in London, England, talking about why she's going on strike.
I'm here to speak on behalf of the Global Women's Strike and the All Africa Women's Group. Okay, we're a network of women. We're from every shade. We're from every background. We're from every country. And we're immigrants and non-immigrants, and we're getting ready. We're building up to the 8th of March, which is going to be an international women's strike in over 30 countries. And we need all of your support to make it a fantastic and a mega day. A lot of us are immigrants. London is an immigrant city, 40%. And more are immigrants. We make a big contribution. First of all, we bring the movement. We bring the information that people need to organize. And we bring an education to people that don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. We want that counted, and we're up against a virulent media that lies about us, lies to us, and tries to hide the truth from us. And the truth is that immigrants have been fighting colonialism, racism, and all kinds of violence in our home country. tell you there's a fantastic statement from women in Thailand, and they say we have to stay together like a broom. Our strands have to be bonded and strong. Otherwise, we're just sticks. So we're here to make a broom. We're going to sweep out Trump. We're going to sweep out May. We're going to sweep out the global killers. We're going to stay together until we win. See you on the 8th of March. Stay with us. Stay strong. Let's do it.
Okay, so that was Sarah, a fired up Sarah Calloway. I'd like now to welcome, I'm delighted to welcome to Sojourner Truth, Barbara Smith, Black feminist author and activist, member of the National Planning Committee of the International Women's Strike US. She's also the co-founder of the famous Combahee River Collective and Kitchen Table Women of Color Press. Barbara, I should say, is really an icon in the women's movement, specifically in the Black feminist movement. Barbara Smith, it's a delight to have you as a guest.
And thank you so much, Margaret. It's great to have reunited over many years or after many years through this incredible women's strike.
Isn't that something? And Barbara, I wanted to hear, I really wanted you to hear that clip, to start off with the voice of a strong Black woman in the UK this time. But, you know, with all of the attacks coming from some of the press, the Los Angeles Times, for example, about how this strike is for privileged women. You know, listening to Sarah and hearing you, I'm sure, will, you know, put a rest to that thought. Any comment on some of these attacks?
Well, that's really absurd. I think, as we have discussed, the privileged women are the ones who say we don't need to do anything, that we just need to keep our mouths shut and go along with the status quo. We are not privileged women, because if we experienced ourselves that way or thought of ourselves that way, we would not indeed be mobilizing and speaking out. So that's just baloney as far as I'm concerned. But it's also the cynical way that the establishment tries to strangle the forward motion and the revolutionary, to be quite frank, the revolutionary movement of people all over the world, including women.
Now, Barbara, your activism goes so far back, and actually for some of our younger listeners, I wonder if you could just share, briefly a little bit about the Combahee River Collective, because that and Kitchen Table Women of Color Press really was a precursor and helped to build, frankly speaking, to this moment, Barbara.
I believe that that's true. The Combahee River Collective was a group of Black feminists who were based in Boston, Massachusetts, and we were organizing in the mid-1970s, which means that we were organizing pretty early in the second wave of the women's movement in the United States. We decided that we would become an independent group. We had been connected to the National Black Feminist Organization, and we decided that we would become an independent group. A number of us were socialists and brought that kind of a class analysis to the work we were doing, but we also, of course, were anti-racist. We had been involved in other movements like the movement to end the war in Vietnam, the Black Panther Party, etc. So we came with some great experiences before we began to build Black feminism. Some of us were also out lesbians, and that was really a break with tradition, because let's face it, it was a few years after the Stonewall Rebellion at the Stonewall Inn in New York City, and what people take for granted now, even though LGBTQ rights are far from having been achieved, we're in a very different place now in the early 21st century than we were in the late decades of the 20th century. So anyway, we brought all of that to the table, and we wrote a statement, the Combahee River Collective statement. This is the 40th anniversary of the writing of that statement, and we basically just tried to put it together and said, this is what Black feminism is. This is how class, race, gender and sexual orientation, how they are intertwined with each other. And what I was just talking to somebody about it recently that you know that something is a classic when it doesn't get old and people continue to read and use it. And that's what has happened with the Combahee River Collective statement. So I really encourage people to find it if they're not familiar with it. And I hope it's clear that I'm saying Combahee River, which is the name of a river in South Carolina where Harriet Tubman led action that freed over 750 slaves. This is in the context of the Civil War. I was speaking about it recently, and someone thought I said the Combahee River Collective Statement. I said, in what world, you know? Anyway, so I don't want to go on for too long. You asked me about Kitchen Table, too, but I want to have a dialogue.
Just on Combahee here, I mean, 40th anniversary, I just can't believe it. I want to underscore something to Barbara, because we haven't met in a long time, but I remember back in the day being in a study group with Audre Lorde and, you know, and other black feminists, you know, sitting around a kitchen table, right, in various places in Manhattan and Brooklyn and whatnot. And Audre, you know, we would talk about, Audre would say, well, I'm black, I'm a woman, I'm a lesbian, and for me, I'm an immigrant, right? And we talked about how we can't cut ourselves off. We are a whole. We are a whole piece. So this thing now that people are talking about, and the phrase intersectionality, you know, great, people are talking about it, but this is not new. I mean, you and the work of your collective and folks like Audre and whatnot, we were talking about that back in the day.
And also Fran Beal.
Yeah.
Who was a part of the Third World Women's Alliance. So, yes, even before Combahee, there were people who were dealing with these issues. Toni Cade Bambara, a wonderful African-American woman writer, did an anthology titled The Black Woman, and many people cite that as the first black feminist anthology, although it was not explicitly described as such. It certainly had the bedrock of the capacity to look at the different issues and the different aspects of our oppression and of our identities, and to begin to build politics out of that.
Right, absolutely. And one thing that my daughter pointed out to me, you know, the name of our show is Sojourner Truth. Her middle name is actually Sojourner. And she said, well, you know, Mom, Sojourner Truth was a very early advocate of intersectionality, if you just look at her speech, right?
It's so true.
Yeah. So then a quick word on Kitchen Table, Women of Color Press, before we say a bit more about the strike and your participation.
Well, Kitchen Table Women of Color Press actually began as a conversation, a phone conversation between Audre Lorde and myself. We had become friends in the late 1970s. She was an author who I very much admired, and we met in the context of the Modern Language Association, which I was a member of and also on one of its important committees, which was the Commission on the Status of Women. We were building women's studies in this nation because women's studies didn't really exist as a field in that period. And I was, of course, committed to building black women's studies in the United States. Anyway, as I said, Audre and I were talking, and it was probably 1980, and she was coming to Boston to do a black women's poetry reading on Halloween. And she said, Barbara, we really need to do something about publishing. Each of us had our experiences dealing with white women's publications and also white women's presses. And some of those were positive experiences, and some of them were decidedly not positive. But whatever they were, we did not have control over our own words and our own vision of the world. And so she said, as I just quoted, we really need to do something about publishing. I said, yes, we really do. And we had a meeting that very weekend at my home in Boston. That's where I lived at that time, Roxbury. And we began to build what became Kitchen Table Women of Color Press. And one of the things that I'm so proud about, there are a lot of things that I think that Kitchen Table did at a time that no one was really interested in the voices of women of color, is that we decided from the very beginning that we would be inclusive of all women of color, all origins, all heritages, all ethnicities. It was not a black women's press. Some people have said it was, or thought that it was, but that was never what it actually was. We were inclusive of all women of color.
Yeah, I'm glad you underscored that because as I co-founded a Black women's organization, and when we became international, right, and going into Latin America, the Caribbean region, the UK, and other places, people were like, wait a minute. And we became a women of color in the Global Women's Strike. And that's a little controversial because I actually like the term Black.
Yes, I do too.
As opposed to adding the American onto it, because I think that adds a level of nationalism that a number of us, frankly, are not interested in, and shows more connectedness in the diaspora. But, a case can also be made for, underscoring women of color press. Now, Barbara Smith, what we're going to have to do is we're just going to have to make an appointment and do like a full 1 hour conversation with you, because there's no way you got to run in a couple of minutes, and there's no way that we can do justice to all of, what you have contributed and all that you have to say to building this movement as we see it now. So And as for Boston and Roxbury and all of that, that divided city, that could be a full conversation in and of itself. Bob.
Exactly, I know. I, if you have the time, though, I do want to say something about the strike itself.
Please, that's the next thing. Yep, go ahead.
If you had a question for me, I'm sorry to have interrupted, but I just wanted to say how inspiring it is to me, having been involved as long as I have in movements for social, economic, and racial justice, that we've gotten to a point that on March 8, 2017, that women are mobilizing all over the globe to speak out against the forces that would undermine our well-being, the forces that oppress us, that see us as second, third, or fourth class citizens. We are all together in this effort to uplift the fact that women are full-fledged human beings who deserve rights and who do not deserve to be exploited in any way. So I just think it's really exciting. I think that what we saw on January 21st was obviously exciting and historic, but I think that this is another chapter in an incredible period of women speaking out and women fighting for justice, not just for ourselves, but for our families, for men, for everybody. Because as we said in Combahee, if Black women were free, then everybody would be free.
That's right.
Because we would have taken care of all the isms if Black women were free. So that's the spirit in which we mobilize and speak out and organize today.
Right. And we expect it. Today certainly is already an historic one because it's the very, very first time women in over 50 countries are taking action together. Barbara Smith, part of the leadership of the International Women's Strike U.S. She's part of the National Planning Coordinating Group, the National Planning Committee. And she's also an icon in the women's movement, specifically in the Black feminist movement, and check out that Combahee River Collective statement because it is so relevant to all of what we're facing today. Barbara Smith, thank you so very much for all that you have done, and it's really been a pleasure working with you yet again after so many years. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Margaret. And I did want to mention the name of my most recent book that has a lot of this history in it.
Okay.
Its title is Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around, 40 Years of Movement Building with Barbara Smith. It's published by SUNY Press. It's co-edited by Alicia Jones and Virginia Eubanks. So if people really want to delve before you and I have our next conversation, they can find that.
And we'll talk about that as well. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're going to take a short station break. And coming up, Ashley Bohr, a woman who is also part of the leadership of today's International Women's Strike, of the activities going on in the USA, and waiting to speak with us is the Reverend Annie Chambers out of Baltimore, Maryland. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
She's just a girl and she's hot like a flame. She's on fire, baby, on fire. Oh, yeah. She's filled with catastrophe. She lives in a world that's on fire, baby, on fire. Oh, 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 oh. She's got her feet on the ground and she's burning it down.
Welcome back to Sojourner Truth. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. It is International Women's Day. We want to wish everyone an International Women's Day. And I have to say this, is that even though you're hearing my voice, I'm on strike today. This show was actually recorded on the 7th, just so you will be able to hear more about the International Women's Strike for those of you who are listening on the radio today. But it is International Women's Day. We want to wish a happy International Women's Day to all of the women who are listening across the nation and indeed Sojourner Truth listeners around the world, and to know that I'm definitely in solidarity with all of you who have taken the day off or who will take part of the day off or who, after, if you can't take any time off from work, after work, you're going to show up at one of the several activities happening on March the 8th. And if you go to the International Women's Strike US website, that is www.womenstrike.org, you'll find out what's happening in your city and in cities, I think over 50 cities around the country today. We want to welcome all of our SoundCloud listeners. You can check us out at www.sotrueradio.org. If you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook as well. But first, our weekly Earth Minute.
Berta Cáceres, a Honduran environmental activist and winner of the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize, was shot dead 1 year ago over her opposition to a hydroelectric dam. The UK Guardian recently reported that leaked court documents indicate Berta's murder was an extrajudicial assassination linked to the country's U.S.-trained special forces. The U.S. is the main provider of military and police support to Honduras. This support is focused on Honduran special forces units originally created during the Dirty War of the 1980s, when nearly 200 leftists and others were disappeared or murdered. Critics accuse these U.S.-backed elite forces of commonly targeting community leaders. A source for The Guardian explained, "It's inconceivable that someone with Berta's high profile, whose campaign had made her a problem for the state, could be murdered without at least implicit authorization of military high command." After her murder, demands were raised for the U.S. to revoke military aid to Honduras. Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration, however, refused to take any action. For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
All righty. That was our weekly Earth Minute. And now continuing our special today, I'd like to welcome Ashley Bohr. She is a queer, feminist, anti-racist activist and academic based in Syracuse, New York. She is a visiting assistant professor of philosophy at Hamilton College, a member of the National Planning Committee of the International Women's Strike USA. She also serves as the senior campaigns organizer for the Center for Jewish Nonviolence and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace Academic Advisory Council. I'd like to go to a clip from BBC where they're having a discussion about International Women's Day and putting it in some context, but also the International Women's Strike that's happening today in so many countries around the world. Let's go to that clip now.
Summer, what generally have women in the past hoped to achieve by striking, withdrawing their labour?
Well, first of all, you withdraw your labour because you're fed up and you can't take any more and you think that people will come out with you. But the first really victory of the strike that hasn't happened yet is that we're beginning to remember women's history and all the strikes that women have been involved in, sex strikes, other work strikes, birth strikes, and that's what we need. We need to find our history. And what we have achieved with strikes has been tremendous. We achieved peace in Liberia in 2003 when women got together and said, no sex until you fix this thing up, this civil war of 14 years. The women in Poland achieved so far, and they're still out there, that abortion rights were to be taken from them, and the law was withdrawn because the women were not going to have it. The women in Argentina have achieved the fact that the murder of women is to be taken seriously by the police and by the society generally. So we achieve what we need to achieve at that moment, and what we're doing now is to achieve an international network of striking.
Let's bring Maria in from Brighton. Maria, Iceland's women went on strike in 1975. What prompted that strike?
Well, I think perhaps calling it a strike in the terms that you use for union industrial action isn't quite descriptive of what happened in 1975 in Iceland. It was more of a walkout. It was a day off, in a sense, and it was never referred to as a strike exactly to... not to confuse it with traditional industrial action that unions take. What prompted it was that 1975 was described as the year of the woman by the UN General Assembly, and Icelandic women took that to heart and took on a... So there was a committee formed to organize this day that did not follow the political... spectrum. Women from all walks of life, all political parties came together to organise this day.
And what was the result of that day away from work, shall we call it, rather than strike?
Well, I mean, Iceland is the leader on all of the gender equality charts that are put forth in the world. And I think what happened in 1975 was that what was brewing in every household with all women became somewhat more formalized, and the social changes that took place following this were quite big. And I would say, I mean, gender equality is a mainstream issue in Iceland. It's not a fringe issue.
Now, Selma, we'll be hearing about Lysistrata in a moment, obviously the subject of a Greek play. You mentioned earlier that there have been sex strikes, real sex strikes. Where, apart from Liberia, has that happened and been successful?
Well, the first place it happened, or one of the places it happened, was in the UK. In the 1870s, women were unbelievably poor and unable to feed their children, so they decided to have less, fewer children. And the way they achieved that was, in general, a sex strike. It was a birth strike. It was to tell the men, we cannot sleep together when the result is more impoverishment of our families. We have to see the children without food. So no sex or less sex until we get something for ourselves, something to feed the children. And it is generally agreed that that, in general, sex strike in the 1870s resulted ultimately in the welfare state, but in some welfare coming to some women. You know how it takes a while before it spreads. But the scene was set by sex strikes all over Africa.
What, Hannah,
were signs of sex strikes at different times.
What, Hannah, do you think is likely to happen on March the 8th, given there are new rules on strike action?
Indeed, there are new restrictions. But the reality is, on the 8th, what we will see across the UK in workplaces and in streets is women, first of all, standing up and celebrating the contribution we make to society, the social change we have delivered. But we recognise there is still a lot more work to be done. We continue to need to stand together. We continue need to battle domestic violence. We need to win genuine equal pay to narrow that pay gap.
Well, there you have it, Ashley. By the way, that was a discussion with Selma James, who is internationally known. She is a founder of the Wages for Housework campaign. And that's an issue that's coming back to the forefront internationally. And also a woman, Maria from Brighton, who participated in the strike in Iceland. And Ashley, who's with the senior campaigns organizer for the Center for Jewish Nonviolence and a member of Jewish Voice of Peace, and also part of the leadership of the International Women's Strike in the U.S., part of the coordinating group. Just listening to that history, Ashley, we know that a lot has happened to build to this historic moment happening today on March the 8th. You know, tell us your reaction to what you've heard and your thoughts, too, on the buildup that led to this moment.
I think that what this segment was able to dramatize really beautifully was the history of movements and actions and strikes that form the historical background in which the International Women's Strike of 2017 is taking place. But one of the things that I would add to this conversation as absolutely central is the decades and indeed centuries of organizing and writing by specifically women of color and women of the global South, whose voices and knowledges and writings and theories and organizing history have been really central to the development of the International Women's Strike U.S. platform this year and our approach to organizing, which is unabashedly intersectional, its thinking. Central to the platform this year is a focus on white supremacy, on racism, on imperialism, as well as questions on the basis of gender, sexuality, and gender identity. And so part of a history that we need to talk about in talking about the International Women's Strike is the history of women of color inside the United States and out, really forming the basis of this frame, this analysis, and redoing, laying the groundwork that the International Women's Strike is standing the legacy of this year.
Yeah, and Ashley, I went to Washington, D.C. I participated in the big march there, inauguration weekend, and I was there because I helped to organize Black Women's Deliberation on multi-generational Black resistance. And one reason I wasn't in the city, Los Angeles, where I am based. But we know that the theme for the Women's March, and that was a march, this is a little bit different. It's a strike, and we'll talk a little bit about the kinds of activities that women are going to be involved in. That overall theme was women's rights or human rights, but they also had a very, you know, progressive platform. And I think some of the leadership of women of color in that march had something to do with it. But looking at this U.S. Platform, it really is quite political. First of all, this is not a weekend march. It's not something happening on a Saturday or Sunday. Not to put those down. Those are really important. This is midweek happening today. Mm-hmm. And it's not a march. It's women doing all kinds of activities around the world, including at 6 p.m. today, women, wherever we are in the world, we're going to make some noise. That's one thing we will share around the world. But as you pointed out in the platform, it's a very political platform, including the end to gender violence, reproductive justice for all, labor rights, full social provisioning, environmental justice for all, and for an anti-racist and anti-imperialist feminism. You know, that that part in particular. And then when you look at endorsers like Jane Fonda and you know, Dolores Huerta, who co-founded the Farm Workers Union with Cesar Chavez, and the hundreds of organizations across the United States, from Feminist Majority to your organization to Black Lives Matter LA, Black Women's Health Project. I just spoke with Barbara Smith, who's really an icon in the feminist movement, you know, a co-founder of the Combahee River Collective, and that statement that they've written still very, very relevant today. So say a little bit about how this came about. I mean, what process did the coordinators go through in developing this platform?
Yeah, so one of the really amazing things about the National Planning Committee has been how democratic and open all of the decision-making on this national body has been. And part of the process of arriving at the platform involved a long and concerted process of each person on the National Planning Committee really identifying the important language around what it means to be an oppressed person today, and recognizing all of the ways in which violence against women, around structural sexism, around how these are related to other forms of oppression in the contemporary world. And so the process really looks like a workshopping of ideas and a meeting of minds and organizations, feminist organizers across the country who've been doing this work for a really long time.
Yeah, and what a wonderful outcome indeed. I mean, it's not the end of today. We are getting in some reports from Poland and Australia and other places. But what a historic day, Ashley. And you are part of it. And where are you going to be today, Ashley?
I live in Syracuse, so I am in Syracuse, New York today. I'm doing a lot of media support for strikes around the country, and I'll be joining activities in Syracuse, New York also.
All righty. Well, Ashley Bora, thank you so very much for joining us, and thank you for your work, and congratulations. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And as we go into our final segment here on this International Women's Strike, we are reminded that today is also a day without a woman, called by the Women's March on Washington, also for March 8th. So they are events, a day without a woman event, International Women's Strike events. And of course, the Women's March on Washington issued a statement in solidarity with the international strike. So women are coming together and working together on this, and so many different activities happening around the world. What I'd like to do now is to go to a clip of women speaking about why they are going on strike.
I'm striking on March 8th.
I'm striking on March 8th.
I'm striking on March 8th.
I'm striking on March 8th
because I believe women should be free to make the decisions regarding their own bodies.
I'm striking on March 8th
for equal pay and equal opportunity,
because women's work makes all other work possible,
and because it's about time we start valuing women's labor.
I'm striking on March 8th
porque al salir a la calle quiero ser libre y no valiente,
because women matter.
I'm striking on March 8th because reproductive services are a human right and childbirth is a public service.
Jeunes, Jeanne, Azadi, which is women, life and freedom.
Pour l'avenir des jeunes filles, des jeunes enfants qui sont en train de naître en ce moment.
I'm striking on March 8th
for Palestinian women in Palestine who are oppressed and women everywhere who are oppressed.
Voy a hacer huelga el día 8 de marzo
for my two little sisters and future generations of women to come.
Because misogyny is the mother of all oppressions.
All righty. And there you have it. That was a roundup. It actually is on the website of the Women's Strike US, and you can check it out at www.womensstrikeus.org. International Women's Day and the International Women's Strike and a Day Without a Woman. I'd like to welcome to Sojourner Truth the Reverend Annie Chambers. She's based in Baltimore, Maryland, currently the regional president of the Welfare Rights Union, also president of the National Homeless Union, Big Mama's House for Youth and Families and Public Housing, and Scattered Site Rehab Housing. Reverend Annie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Reverend Annie Chambers, tell us what's going to be going on in Baltimore.
Well, we're planning, and we know we're having a very large march in Baltimore, but this will be our first real big Women's Day march in Baltimore. We are saying the Women United to Fight Back, International Women's Day March, and Women's Strike on March the 8th. We have groups of women from all walks of life, and we are asking women to, if you can't come out and march with us to at least wear red and to also, you know, don't shop that day. But a lot of groups, we have over now 75 groups, women and some men that has joined in the march with us, to say that we, you know, we are marching on Women's Day, for a lot of issues.
Right. And Reverend Annie Chambers, why is it important, given, I mean, you for so many years now, your work is known in Baltimore and other parts of the United States as an anti-poverty activist on welfare rights. There are some women, and I'll have to say not impoverished women, but more privileged women, to use that term that I really don't like, that are saying, well, this Day Without a Woman or this International Women's Strike is really for privileged women. It doesn't sound as though the coalition that you've put together in Baltimore are primarily folks at the base, people who are dealing with housing crisis and welfare, lack of access to welfare, hunger, poverty, those kinds of issues. Is that the case, Reverend Annie? Although I'm sure you have other women as well, as you say, a broad swath of women participating.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We do have other women. We have, as I've said, women, we have middle class women, working class women, very, you know, and poor women. But I've been an organizer and an activist for over 52 years now. And I've my work have been with women fighting for decent housing and the basic needs of a human being. That's why we're very excited about our marches, because we do have all kinds of women. We're fighting for housing in Baltimore City. They're selling all of the public housing. Rents have tripled in our city, and women can't even afford to, you know, we have a lot of single family, single mothers who can't afford to even have their children, you know, to have a house. I just witnessed this week that there were a sort of a tent city on a bridge. And they came in and took the people's stuff, bulldozed it, and throwed it away. So there were women with children, mother and two teenage daughters who had nowhere else to go. So they ran to keep the social services from taking their children away from them. They couldn't even fight to keep their property. You know, it's a lot going on just for basic things, food, clothes, shelter. And we are very glad that the middle and upper income women have joined us, because when we look at this, Margaret, we see that it all comes back. We are fighting for reproductive rights. We're fighting for just the basic needs of a woman. We're fighting against domestic abuse against us, and, you know, and just a right to raise our children who are being stolen from us and taken away from us under the doctors that we don't have. Of course, there's no jobs. We're not paid the same. We're not even treated the same. So we are marching to say that we're going to fight this. We'll come together. Our march consists of women in prison, women that, you know, working women on the street. Our march consists of school teachers, lawyers. We even have a couple of doctors. We have a lot of students that have come out, and we have a lot of public housing tenants. In Douglas Homes, we have women that have signed up, but we have women all over the city in public housing.
Right.
Women that are social workers have signed up to march with us.
All righty. Well, it sounds as though quite an event happening in Baltimore, March 8th, International Women's Day, the day of the International Women's Strike and of a Day Without a Woman. The Reverend Annie Chambers, thank you so very much for joining us. We're out of time right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. All the best to you, Annie, with and all of you in Baltimore today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. We pray for everyone all over the country and other countries.
Thank you, Reverend Annie. This is Margaret Prescott. We are out of time. I'd like to wish all of our listeners happy International Women's Day. And for the guys out there, even Vogue magazine has a list of things that you could do to support the International Women's Strike. And so we hope to see lots of men out at the activities happening. So I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, our longtime intern, Sherelle Withers, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, our engineer, Mr. T, Teddy Robinson. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. And again, happy International Women's Day, a time to persist and resist. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me.